You know, I think we watched a documentary the other day.
Yes.
That talked about the rule of law.
Yes.
And justice in our institutions.
Yes.
And who mitigates that, you know? The only people that can create a proper or rule of law and have it upheld are those people in power.
Yes.
And we're seeing that right now. You know, there's too many rules that are being manipulated by people in power.
Yeah. Since World War II going down, and after the promulgation of the new constitution that is now working, that has brought the fundamental of human rights, a broad fundamental human rights. And with the new reforms which have taken place on the judiciary, the executive and the legislature, we never used to have a live broadcast of our affairs in the national assemblies. We have today. We never have a digital platform where Kenyans could access justice through online to find out what are their fundamental rights, how to get justice. Today we have the Office of the Ombudsman. We have other civil rights bodies. And we have organizations coming to enlighten and to educate Kenyans on their rights. So since 2002 to date, and with the change of constitution and with the freedom of media, information, Kenyans are getting enlightened.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you can see Kenyans can walk even 24 hours without being arrested. Before, if you could walk at night, you will be arrested. The only thing you will be asked, where is your ID? Mm-hmm. If you don't produce, you are being dropped in a police vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing is detention with no trial.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just being put a charge.
Yeah.
Hmm?
Yeah.
Roaming with an intention to commit murder. Yet where you're walking, there was nobody to be killed. You see that? So Kenyans today, if a policeman comes to arrest a Kenyan, the next question that Kenyan will ask, why do you arrest me?
Mm.
Eh?
Yeah.
What have I done?
So people are asking questions.
So people are asking
questions.
Not accepting to be arrested. You see that?
Yeah.
And even when you are arrested, before the police officer puts a handcuff on you, he will explain to you why he or she is arresting you. You see that?
Yeah.
And when you go to the police cells, you will, if you can access a legal practitioner, a lawyer, to represent you, you see that there is bail, okay, there are bonds. So you'll find a lot of things have happened. Even in the judiciary, the current Chief Justice, every year there is an open day, an open judicial day, where Kenyans are just going to find how to get justice in case their rights have been infringed anywhere.
Let's say you had a civil case.
Yes.
Let's say you had a land right issue.
Yes.
How long would it take for you now to be heard in court? Now, if you are considered middle class, does that make a difference? Certainly makes a difference in my mind if you're wealthy.
Yeah.
But let's say you're living in poverty.
Yeah.
Is there a difference as to when your case might actually be heard in court?
That's true. That's true, Kathy. There is still that disparity between the poor and the rich. And the poor still feels in Kenya that they don't have a right to be heard. And also the rich feels if he or she has the money, then he will manipulate the system. So corruption is playing the old circle. Even with the issues of lands, you find there are widows, very old widows in the up countries.
Mm.
Not even in the up country, even town setup. And if you don't have money, you find somebody with the money. And to go back, we have an issue with agencies. There are these property agents who have just come up and they are colluding with those who have the money to be conduits of lands.
Yeah.
And that has been a issue. Recently, just within our city, Kisumu, a chief colluded with some Asian tycoon to buy a community land about 18 million shillings. And when that happened, because this land is in an area perceived to be an industrial area just within the city, along the airport. So this chief is a young man with ambitions to become rich. He went, contacted an Asian, took 18 million, gave a threat to the community that whatever they wish, if they can't live, they will see the wrath of who he is. So this incident made three people to be burnt alive. One, the owner of the land, together with some of the relatives. The house was burnt while they are inside. And the chief was summoned by the government to go and write a report why that had to happen in this area. Because it is being said, he's the one who conspired to fraud the land. So issues of land, whenever they go to court, they take too long.
Okay.
They can go up to 1 year, 2 years, even 10 years.
Wow.
There are some which have not even been resolved for the last 20 years for some families. Yeah.
So rule of law and justice is still an issue here. You know, I'm going to make one other point here because we're coming up to an hour already.
Okay.
You know, in Kenya, like a lot of other places, there are certainly wealthy people. The last time I did some reading, about 1% of the population is wealthy, making anywhere between $1 million to $1 billion a year.
Absolutely.
Certainly these people are not all corrupt. There are certainly some very legitimate businesses going on. However, some of this money is coming through the back door. And then we have about 45 to 50% of the people still living in poverty. So there's a huge wage disparity. How many people that are making this amount of money are, in effect, philanthropists helping these people, bridging that gap, creating a middle class or a stronger middle class in order to make a government more accountable, more transparent? Because I believe that the middle class people or middle class income wage earners are the ones that actually make governments more accountable because they have the time and resources and the cash to do it. And, you know, they still have something to lose.
Yeah.
Before you answer that, though, we're going to talk a little bit about corruption for just a minute. I'm going to add something that was a personal observation of mine when I was here. Now, we always consider corruption and fraudulent activity as being a bad thing, and we always talk about the government is corrupt. But, you know, we're looking at 80% of the population that is corrupt to one extreme to another. And, I mean, of course, it could be involving millions of dollars from the government hierarchy to the person who believes they don't have to pay their parking fee at the end of the day. But the sad fact for me was, you know, being in a vehicle going from Owasu to Nakuru, getting pulled over by the police, having my driver taken out of the vehicle. My driver, prior to getting out of the vehicle, asked me for 200 Kenyan shillings to pay the police so that he wouldn't have to pay an exorbitant fine down the road or in the police station, because that fine was so large that it could break him and cause his family to starve.
That's true.
So there's this huge revolving issue about corruption, what is good, what is not good, and it's really a broken system.
Yeah.
So we have people that are making millions of dollars off of the backs of global aid, off of the backs of people that are living in poverty, and yet, you know, people are committing these fraudulent activities in order to survive. So it's not even so much something that is illegal, it is about the very basic right to live.
Yeah.
You know, so can you touch on that a little bit?
About corruption. Corruption has been an issue that is like having a cord, like a tapeworm. You know, a tapeworm, when its head cut or its tail cuts, another one comes. So it never ends. So it's like corruption in my country, I'm sorry for this, it's having a cord. And it's like the norm of the day, whereby if you cannot bribe, then you will not get what you want. It is very sad that if you come to our country, you will never get a traffic officer on whichever road. They will always take the money from you, even if you have all the requirements for your vehicle. The reason is the Kenyan police will always find a mistake, even where everything is right. One of these is because if you have all the requirements on your vehicle, they can even say, we have found you with a bangi. You see that? Just to get something out of you. Recently, the police commission body, the body that has been mandated to reform the police, the Kavuludi Commission, they have been doing a police vetting process. And some traffic policemen, you find a police officer who is earning less than 20 shillings, having 30 million in his account, because he's a traffic police officer. Imagine a police officer taking 100 for small matatus, 200 for big matatus, minibuses, 300 for buses, and then 1,000 for trailers. then 500 for counters. By the end of the day, if these police officers stay on the road, they will not leave with less than 100,000 every day. And because of this, some police officers had tough questions to answer during the vetting process. And good enough, some have been retrenched. They are not in the force. But even after that is done, some are still doing. Recently, I went to the Ethics and Anti-Corruption Commission to report a school aid teacher who took money from a parent after a directive was given. And it is not a directive, it's a law that bribery is not supposed to be taken, or any money should not be taken when a child is being admitted. So an information came to me through a friend of mine that an aid teacher of a primary school took 12,000 from a parent who was admitting a student in primary 8. So I went there, took the name of the child, the name of the father, the contact of the father, and went to the Anti-Corruption Commission to report the matter. So the only thing I did not work right, or I did not do because I was informed, was to take the father of that student who was being admitted to go and take 12,000 from the Anti-Corruption Commission, as the money was asked to pay for his son to be admitted. So that one would have made this particular teacher to be arrested. But after that, the person, the officer at the Anti-Corruption Commission gave me a telephone number, a contact number, whereby if such cases arose at any particular time, I should report or call them to attend. So recently I used the same number while I was walking along Mamboreo Road, and I saw policemen pocketing money from matatus, and I said, no, I should just text the officers at the Anti-Corruption Commission offices to come and see what's happening. So I don't know whether they came after I'd passed or they did not come, because I was just walking by the road. So corruption is killing the nation. Corruption has made many young people leave school without employment. Corruption has made systems not to work. You will only be served if you will do as by the request of the civil servants. Corruption has made terrorism threat to get to our nation. Recently, you saw the attack which happened in Somalia where Kenyan KDF forces were killed. Mm-hmm. But before that, 173 were killed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So Kenyans made a foul and cried, how many were killed in Somalia, El Hadi? The government did not give the number. It's only today when Kenyans are knowing that we lost 173 in El Hadi after they were attacked by Al-Shabaab. So recently in Mandera again, you saw Al-Shabaab coming to attack the IEBC officials, those who are doing the registration of voters, and they went with the voting machines, computer laptops. So it's about corruption, because these guys are coming. They have huge money, the terrorists. They find our officers across the border, and they give them money. Once an officer knows very well, I'll not be a victim, I'll not be affected. Somebody else whom I don't know.
So why should
I?
They're being paid off.
So they're being paid off, and these people get in through our borders. Mm-hmm. And even in the system, in the Kenyan forces, it is being perceived that that's where the terrorism is being groomed. It is like an inside job. Recently, I learned that Donald Trump, the US president, asked Kenya a question why they have been able to finish terrorism in their country, yet they have been funded by US government for the last since 1997.
I think we're going to touch on that in regards to global aid and charitable organizations,
yes.
NGOs.
Yes.
But that was my next question.
Yes.
Has global aid been a part of this thing we called corruption? Has it had an influence?
Global aid, to some point, yes or no, it has contributed to the corruption. Because you find a lot of money is coming in when there is no plan for it. So when it comes, every money that comes from whichever international aid, the government must always be aware of, because we have systems with our National Treasury and Central Bank of Kenya. Every money that comes in must always be discovered, and what is the reason, what is the purpose.
Right. And although at the onset of our conversation, we were talking about these bonds, this money that was coming in from the
yes,
U.S.,
yes.
And it simply disappeared.
It disappeared, correct. Yeah. So international aid to corruption, yes, it has contributed, because it has been like an easy way for Kenyan government to get free money. Recently, you saw what happened in one of the refugees camp, Kakuma, and the Somali IDPs wanted to be repatriated back to their country. The international bodies, United Nations bodies, raised their voices and Kenyan government was assertive that we were removing them. But we felt this was not genuine from the government part of it. Mm-hmm. Because this is a government which was not legitimately elected. This is a government that forced itself. And this is a government that has been perceived by international bodies, organizations, that it does not have responsibility to its people. Mm. So the reason why we give him the money is not being seen. So they have a problem with financing their programs. So they saw it fit if they could remove those millions of refugees in our border, Kakuma, not to send them per se, but to send a warning for us to be given aid to run our affairs. So the moment United Nations came in and talked to Kenya and they agreed, they extended the repatriation process because somehow money was now going to come in to help in Kenyan affairs. Mm. You see that? Mm. So international aid to some extent, yes or no, it has contributed to corruption. And when this money comes, the conduits in the government must always set aside their percentage. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, it has come now. What is our portion before we do mm-hmm. 1, 2, 3 that is needed for it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, certainly Global Aid and other organizations, charitable organizations, NGOs, they all have a place. I don't think without them, you know, a lot of developing countries would be where they are today. We've got to look at the percentage of money that actually gets to the people that actually require it. And so that was sort of part of my question about corruption. You know, if you've got $1 billion coming in, how much is actually skimmed off the top? How much is actually getting to the government structures, facilities below them, so the local governments? And how much is that is actually getting to the people? And then you look at the fact that, and as you said, the Kenyan government has been taking out all this money and creating this huge debt load, putting even more pressure on its people because they can't pay it back because money just doesn't now get to the people that require it because it gets tied up in debt and loan reimbursement.
Yeah.
So there has been some talk that maybe global aid is not the way to go, maybe to reduce it, maybe to encourage more pressure on the governments to be transparent and more accountable and increase taxes and increase or boost the economy through employment programs, skills training programs, and certainly entrepreneurship to build the economy from the inside out. I know I'm mentioning a lot of things here, and I suppose I'm kind of, you know, throwing out this idea of if we didn't have global aid in Kenya, if we didn't have global aid in developing countries, which, by the way, has been going on for the last 50, 60 years, and we really haven't seen any great results. I mean, 50% of the people in Kenya are still technically poor. It hasn't really changed anything. What do you think some of those answers might be in order to boost the economy, kind of decrease corruption as we see it? Do you have any kind of insight to that?
One of the insights for corruption to be reduced in African countries, or majorly let's talk about Kenya. To take you back in 2013, the government that is in place, like I'd said, was not legitimately accepted or elected by the people. And being that the president and the deputy president then were indictees to the ICC, and we were ahead of the election, the immediate former British envoy who left told Kenyans that choices have got consequences. And the consequences were, if the ICC inductees would be elected, then Kenya would not be given international aid from Britain. And that means a lot of NGOs from Europe will not be functioning. And that means the relationship of Kenya and Europe also would be wanting. And that is still to go on the international aid. If it does not come, the economy would suffer. Like in the city of Kisumu, where I live, we can say 70% of employment bodies which have employed people, are NGOs in Kisumu alone. But after 2013, with this government, many have shut down. And like I said during the time we were having our session, on poverty and documentary, I said that CDC, the Center for Disease Control, has collapsed partially because $7 billion, which were sent by the donor organizations to run the programs of the CDC in Kisumu and Kenya, was stolen. And that made 1,000 people lost the jobs. Over 50 faces which were under CDC closed down. And that meant a big effect to the economy of Kisumu and Kenya. And to say that international aid to sub-Saharan Africa, Kenya, and to our city is contributing to corruption and to poverty, because the government is now going to relax back to say we have other bodies supporting us. So what do we need to do? What we need to do is to relax. The little money we get from the public coffers, what do we do with it? Nothing. So that's where a lot of money is lying at the National Treasury, and it is being stolen. Because the function of the government is being done by another body, which are NGOs, employing. You see that?
Mm-hmm.
Doing public awareness on sensitization on health and other things.
Mm-hmm.
You find they are also having other health services in our public hospitals.
Yeah.
So you find what the government is transmitting to the health sector or any other sector is limited because it has been subsidized. So you realize if there is any emergency, the quick emergency pool of NGOs, the economy collapses. And that's where the confusion starts. People lose jobs. People begin to cry. Services begin to come down. And that is when the government comes back to the drawing board. When the government comes back to the drawing board, it finds the government with no money because the money which was there was stolen because NGOs were there. So international aid, to some extent, has contributed to the low development of some countries and its people.
So there's certainly pros and cons to everything. When we talk about global aid and its effects on the economy, you know, if we could decrease it and make the governments aware that people need to start standing on their own two feet, it would increase the amount of people able to become entrepreneurs, especially when there isn't an employment bank out there that is full of diversity. And diversity, is a key term, because the more diversity you have in the economy, the more jobs there's going to be. So, you know, right now, I can't remember if we had mentioned, we've got a heck of a lot of people coming out of schools and universities that have no jobs.
No jobs.
And I remember being in the university the last time I was here, and I said, how many people here have the skills to become entrepreneurs? And after 4 to 6 years of education, do you know what they said? Nothing.
Nothing.
They do not have the skills to do
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
So now they're coming out and they're looking for white collar jobs.
Mm.
There are none.
Mm.
And so now they're driving taxis and they're on peaky peakies,
mm-hmm.
and some of them have no jobs at all.
Mm.
So, you know, regardless of what the government is doing, do you think the economy needs to start working from the inside out? People need to be trained, and I know that you're involved to some aspect of skills training within the community. Would that also change the face of corruption as well? When people now have to, again, stand on their own two feet, become entrepreneurs, and there's so many people in this country that are highly educated, that have these brilliant minds, that wouldn't that bring to the table that diversity that you're looking for? So they start these businesses that will now employ maybe 2, 5, 10 people,
mm-hmm.
and maybe down the road 100 people.
Mm.
You know, wouldn't that be maybe the route to go? I mean, there's baby steps that have to be taken, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think that might have some sort of bearing on it?
I want to give a reference from the Bible. I'm not so much conversant with the Bible, though I'm a Christian. God created man to work, not to have a job. And we go to school, that is the perception we were given.
Mm.
We go to school to have a job, and a job means having a white-collar job. Work is going to school to be skilled, to be empowered, and to become entrepreneur. Meaning, if I qualify to be a lawyer, and I decide after the school that I'm a lawyer, yes, but I don't fail, I need to go to practice. Why don't I come up, set up something, become myself employer, employ people, create jobs? And that is work in the Bible. So from the beginning, God wanted man to be an entrepreneur, somebody to invent, innovate, create, for others also to come in and enjoy building it up. And that's why God said, you go and continue the creation. And the reason why Africa, we are Africa, we have a perception in our family system, whereby if I'm the firstborn, I'll be taken to school. After school, if I became lucky and finish and have a job, by the time my parents would have retired and they will not be able to take care of my other siblings to school. So the responsibility of my parents are dropped to me to educate my siblings. So that one happens like that, like that, like that. After it is done, I get responsibility on, or is on me to take care of my parents. So you'll find, instead of me looking on my family, I'm looking on the extended family. And that's another part of poverty contribution. When will I be stable? So you realize by the time you're stable, you are to the point of retirement. So that is what led to that donor aid. Africa is to depend. We are dependents. If I see Kathy, I feel Kathy being a white, I think I can depend on Kathy. You see that?
It's an attitude.
An attitude, a perception, a mind that has been created. And when that is created, you realize even with your potentials, you relax on it because somebody is giving you something at some particular time. So when that is done, you tend to relax and feel everything is rosy and easy. So for us to have a clear way of how to change our lives, we need to renew our mind. We need to revolutionize and begin looking with our education curriculum. I said while we were in the forum that our curriculum system has done the damage. And the damage it has caused will cost Kenya for the next 50 years. Because the new system they are creating will be fully in place in 2026. So for Kenya to begin realizing growth in its systems and the international community also to realize Kenya can now stand on its own will be another 50 years. And then Kenya will be 100 years after independence. So that is when we will have an absolute transformation, innovation. Kenya can now begin exporting.
Yeah, you know, and when you're talking about the education system, that's another thing I wouldn't mind throwing in here too, is when I was teaching out in Owosso back in 2014, teaching is generally taught out of the syllabus.
Yeah.
There's very little room for questions.
No.
Very little room for finding the time for question and answers. And especially in the rural areas, very little time for creativity.
Yeah.
I find everybody's very book smart.
Book smart.
Book smart.
True.
But to create, to have ideas and perpetuate that, there's some difficulty. Although I know it's out there because I've seen many examples of some people that are incredibly creative, and we need to capture that. You're right, that source of curriculum, the way people are taught, really needs to change.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, go ahead.